the unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth, itself immaculate, even a 100,000 myriad countless. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself.
This is the Buddha, this is the Dharma, this is the Sangha. This verse that we just recited, we recite at the beginning of every formal lecture that I do in the meditation hall. The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Think what that means. And think the responsibility that puts on both the person who's giving the Dharma talk and on those who are listening. Now, how can anyone claim to be expressing the unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth? And what does it mean? What are the implications of saying, I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself? It's a very sobering verse if one really looks at it and takes it at face value, takes it literally. For myself, I know that if I do not ask for help before I begin to do a talk, and if I do not prepare myself by opening my heart to the eternal, I'll probably just end up spouting just my own personal opinions. And if one is listening to a Dharma talk and one does not open one's heart to the teaching, then all one will take away is one's own personal opinions. What both have in common from the giving and the receiving end, what both ends have in common is the need to turn towards the eternal and open the heart. Someone who knows it all already doesn't need to turn to the eternal and ask for help in giving a Dharma talk. Someone who knows it all already doesn't need to be sitting there listening to a Dharma talk. What we all need to bring to this situation is a genuine humility. I am not God. I am not the eternal. I am not Kanzeon. I need the help of the eternal. I need the help of God. I need the help of Kanzeon. This is really the starting point for what religion really is. And as one of our scriptures says, if our first step is false, we will immediately stumble. If we don't start from this point of turning to that which is greater than ourselves and sincerely seeking its help and sincerely opening ourselves to that help, then everything we do thereafter is marked by our own greed, hate, and delusion. Even if we do this, even if we get the first step right, it's hard enough to keep our own greed, hate, and delusion from jumping back in the driver's seat. And that's a reminder how much we need to keep doing it. This is the true starting point of religion. It is the true starting point of the genuinely spiritual life. It is the true beginning of deeper spirituality. And it's not possible to do an end run around it in any way whatsoever. truly begin, and it's where we keep coming back to make a new beginning. Over and over and over and over. And this is a genuine foundation of daily training. This is such a simple matter that there's not that really that much to be said about it. And yet it's amazing how it gets glossed over and omitted. And it's amazing how all the knowledge and seeming wisdom of the world and of religion is simply empty if it glosses over this genuine starting point. What is the point of anything whatsoever if there is not the true refuge of the eternal? That expresses a modern dilemma perfectly, as perfectly as it can be expressed. And modern confusion about religion, which is more or less worldwide confusion at this point. What is the point of anything if there is not the refuge of the eternal? Well, the truth of the matter is there is the refuge of the eternal. But it can't be found in universities and seminaries and politics and ideologies and external occupations and external attractions. And it can't be found in opinions and worldly wisdom. It's only found when some individual human being or some individual other kind of being on their own, out of their own sense of their profound need, cries out for help. Very often, this only happens when someone wakes up to the fact of what a humongous mess they have made of their life. And then in the twinkling of an eye, everything can change. A whole new basis can be established. Because out of that horror of the scale and the complexity of that mess, and of the futility of trying to get out of it without help, comes that cry of the heart. And then as our master says, then the brain throws up its hand and says, I can't understand it all. I can't do it all. I don't get it. Please help. And one may not be consciously sending that prayer to God or the eternal at that point. But believe me, that prayer is heard. And that is a new starting point for a life. That's where real life begins. That's the spring that we need to return to again and again. And any situation that we encounter in life that draws us back to that place where we realize how much we need the help of the eternal, that situation, everyone and everything involved in it, is for us a Buddha and the finest Zen master we'll ever find. because it is pointing us toward our true refuge and toward the attitude that we must take in order to root ourselves in our true refuge. This process transcends all isms, all particular circumstances. Doesn't just happen in Buddhism, doesn't just happen in formal religion. And we're very fortunate in having a religious practice and a religious teaching, both of which support a way of life and a mental focus that helps us stay aware of how much we need the help of that which is greater than ourselves, and helps us do it in the sense of taking that refuge and seeking that help. Genuine meditation is that taking refuge, and is that seeking of help. If one has asked for the help, one then has to listen for it and wait for it and stay open to it. That's why we meditate. Without that, what's called meditation isn't yet really meditation. Because true meditation is contemplative prayer.
Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.